And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. You know, so many people are writing and thanking me for writing and publishing the book Mysterious Monuments, the encyclopedia of secret Illuminati designs, Masonic architecture, and occult places. And one of the things that a writer recently asked me about, he said, Tex, he said, I am very interested in the pillars on buildings, such as in the great Greek and Roman temples of religion, you know, where they worship the goddess and Zeus and Apollo and all of the zodiacal, you know, entities. And they said, evidently, pillars or columns have a great meaning in Freemasonry and to the Illuminist world. And you find these same kind of columns, and they have different names from Ionic, Doric, Corinthian columns. Very beautiful. If you saw the movie, you know, Gone with the Wind, you saw the beautiful Terra mansion and these antebellum mansions. And this person said there's something very wicked and evil about those, but I can't figure out because in another way they seem very beautiful. And of course, in Mysterious Monuments, I do talk about pillars, but I have a book in front of me. And I'll tell you, I've had this author on before, and she is a fascinating guest. And the reason is because of her knowledge. In fact, the word knowledge is right on the cover of her new book. It's entitled Eden, The Knowledge of Good and Evil. She has a picture on it, a hand holding an apple. In other words, the forbidden fruit, let's just say. And it has the number 666. Now, right away you say, oh, well, I know all about Adam and Eve and Eden and, you know, they ate of the forbidden fruit when they shouldn't have them. They were banished from the garden. You know, I learned that in Sunday school, so I'll just pass on to the next book. Dear friends, you're making a big mistake. Let me tell you, this book, over 400 pages, and it really is a companion to Mysterious Monuments because it starts you in Eden, but it takes you all the way to the 21st century. That's right. To the Illuminati mysteries of architecture throughout the world. And really the theme is the pillars of knowledge. The pillars are columns of knowledge. And they can be traced back, these pillars of knowledge. And they have great meaning for the future of the whole world. And it starts in the book of Genesis and goes through all of the 66 books of the Bible to the book of Revelation. So I want to introduce to you Dr. Pugh. Now listen, friends, I want to beg you. See, I don't mind begging people, sure. I never beg for money, but I will beg you to get this book, okay? There's a difference, all right? I don't beg you for donations or offerings, but this book you need for your personal knowledge. So please get a pen or a pencil. And write down our address, our phone number if you don't have it, because later in the program, I'm going to tell you how to get this book that we offer in the ministry. And as you know, we never offer a book, an audio tape, a CD, a video, unless I endorse it and unless it will contribute to your knowledge of these last days. I never go to the bestsellers list at the Christian or secular bookstores and say, let's see what would sell. Let's see what people will buy. What can make us money? I don't do that. That's ridiculous. So we have books that you will not find at Barnes & Noble or at Borders or B. Dalton or Walden Books. That's right. We have books that often are censored. In the case of Dr. Joy Jeffries Pugh, and that last name is P-U-G-H, and Joy is the first name is spelled J-O-Y-E. That's about as bad as spelling text with an E on the end of it, isn't it? Well, in any case, oh, I shouldn't say it's bad. It's good. Okay, it's good. the conversation starter. But in any case, this is a book that Christian bookstores may not even understand, even if they attempted to read it. And yet, if you have the basic knowledge of discernment, and I believe our listeners here at Power Prophecy do, you'll love this book. And that's why I'm going to tell you how to get it. You'll want to order it. And it really is a wonderful reading book, and it'll give you many hours of blessings. So I want to welcome Dr. Joy Jeffries-Pugh to the program. Welcome, Dr. Joy.
Hi, Tex. How are you today?
You know, I'm great, but the back cover of your book says Dr. Joy Jeffries-Pugh drops a bomb on the world. With this book, I sort of think that's true. And, you know, this is a book like none other that I've really seen. Now, the back, let me just go right away and say it says here, Dr. Joy, decodes an ancient plan carefully inscribed on the pillars of knowledge, which has traveled secretly throughout history to ensure the Antichrist comes to power in this generation. Can that be so that there is an ancient plan and it's inscribed on these pillars of knowledge and it's traveled in secret throughout history and it will tell us about the Antichrist coming to power?
Yes, it will, Tex, and it's right before our eyes. And I think that your newest edition of book about these megalithic buildings and the types of structures that are right before our eyes are actually there for the purpose of indoctrinating the masses, but they have been a part of this world since really the time of Adam and Eve with Cain and Abel.
Now, we think of Adam and Eve just being in a garden. There were trees and beautiful plants, and then, you know, they were banished from that paradise. But they had these two sons, Cain and Abel, and one of them turned out to be a murderer, a Cain. And evidently, when Cain was found with sin, he was banished from the presence of God. And according to your book, he went out and became a builder.
That's right. You know, and I found that quite interesting that when, you know, when God told him he had to leave from the garden, you know, from the Garden of Eden area, that he actually became a vagabond. And his first dwelling was actually in the land of Nod, which we know is east of Eden, according to that. And upon Cain, God actually put a mark or an X on him. And that X mark actually, and you really want to stress this because we're going to be talking about how important these symbols are today. Mm-hmm. This X mark is an X or a cross with identical links on each end. It can be turned straight up or it can be turned sideways like we make an X. But it became the first coat of arms that represented the Dragon King. And that particular word, Dragon King, and that X mark means those outside the will of God. And, you know, I found it interesting that once this X was put on Cain, that he actually became a builder, because we know before that in Genesis 4 that Cain was actually called a farmer. And a farmer and a builder are two totally different types of capabilities that are involved in that. And so I really, when I was doing the research, it really made me really come to a knowledge that there was something significantly wrong with being a builder. And this particular, like I say, X mark followed that Cain lineage all the way from the time of the flood, right on through the flood, you know, and it still is a part of what I believe are secret societies that use the skull and bones and the X's and things like that on their particular buildings that they build today.
So he had a mark put on him, and today you're saying, and you're absolutely correct, that these secret societies, they cherish different marks, logos, a crest, insignia.
That's right. And if you really look at this, and you, like I say, if you really look at Genesis, especially Genesis chapter 4, 16 through 24, you find out that, you know, that Cain goes out and he builds a city, and then it has the listing of all in that particular chapter of Genesis from 16 to 24. It tells about his family, and the people who came there after him. And interesting enough, it goes on to say that there were parts of people in his family lineage that became interested or actually had capabilities such as the harp and organ, the instructor in iron and brass, and then, you know, the people that were doing other types of what I call, you know, astrology and things like that. And so once you see that, you go like, there's got to be a connection here for evil, because even Lamech, who fell into Cain's lineage, was actually, you know, making comments that he had slain a man. So they were actually very terrible people. We don't see that in, you know, in Adam's lineage being mentioned from Seth. So I also found it interesting that Cain's family, you know, in the Bible does not have a record of the years that their, you know, his family actually lived or died, or how long they were alive, or that kind of thing. But in looking at all the types of things that was involved with what we were seeing, from him being a farmer to all of a sudden, you know, building these cities, and then of course having these particular, I think, sciences such as, you know, working brass and iron and alchemy and things of that, that there had to be some type of contact with what I believe was a higher form of knowledge. And, you know, a lot of people get a little nervous when you talk about, well, you know, where did he get that particular knowledge from? And these kind of sacred sciences, you just have to wonder. But, you know, when I was doing the research, I found even in the ancient history of the Jews that Flavius Josephus wrote, that he actually makes the comment that Cain was the author of Measures and Weights, and that he is who changed the world into cunning craftiness. And when I read that from that particular first century historian, I'm thinking, you know, he really is telling us something very significant here about him starting to look at science, weight and measures, and that there was a craft involved in that, and it was a craft of cunningness. And when you think about those words, you think about deceit and manipulative and mystical and black magic and those kinds of things. So those kind of things drew me in to look a little bit more into what it was that Cain's lineage was bringing into the ball game that really Jehovah was not happy with, or, you know, why he brought about the flood.
Now, Cain, according to Genesis, becoming a builder of cities, started out, as you mentioned, a farmer with a connection to the earth. Now, it's interesting today that the environmentalists, who seem to be very, very favorable to scientific changes, they're really not Luddites, you know, like we would think, that want to destroy science as such. They simply want to use science, harness it, in order to promote their serpentine, you know, satanic views, it seems to me. But so we have today these architects of great cities, buildings, monuments, statues, building this architectural colossus of Satan, and they seem to be in league with the environmentalists of the world, who say we're close to the earth. So there seems to, maybe there is a connection. Now, I don't mean the average farmer who gives credit to God for his crop and so forth, and, you know, the wonderful Christian farmers out there, but there does seem these environmentalists who say they love Mother Earth maybe don't love it at all, but they just use it for their own philosophies.
Right, I do believe that's exactly what's going on, and you know, it's interesting to me that really before the, you know, the Great Flood occurred, there appeared to be some type of humans that were there before that period of time that had some really what I call outstanding architectural skills, and those people, you know, they've unearthed things as far as, you know, in Europe and Middle East and Babylon, Egypt, China, South America. I mean, we find some of the most oldest and famous megalithic structures that have been built all around these areas. And, you know, when I did the research on this, trying to find the connection to how that, you know, that particular science and connection to the what I call nature or nature worship, or how that that I felt like there was a pulling away from what God's intentions were, I found that there was a group of people that was called the Grooved Ware people. And they actually came into the country or city of Sumner, And they kind of like brought civilization with them, because up until that time it appears that that particular area was, you know, they were just not capable of knowing the sciences. And that in looking at this and looking at some of the things that had been unearthed, it seems to be that there was a remnant of the giants that was available after the flood, and that were involved with these building these big cities and things like that. So, you know, when I started looking at what was the Bible really saying about giants and the remnant of giants and things like that, that would prove that those, you know, there were some really huge, huge men of great stature and were capable of doing some really big building back in those days. And I, you know, I was interesting when it actually came across something that said that when in the Bible that Moses went to send out, you know, his people to spy, that when they, you know, came back and were talking about going into the promised land, it was like, you know, there are these huge cities out there. They're walled. They're very great. And that his spies were saying they saw the children of Anak. And then when you start trying to find out, well, what does that mean? And it says, I know in Numbers, in the book of Numbers, it tells you that these spies said what they were seeing were giants, that they were the sons of Anak. And they had come from the giants, and that they themselves, the little spies from Moses' group, looked like grasshoppers. So if you stop and think about that, those people had to be huge for them to consider themselves as a grasshopper in their sight. Because if we look at a grasshopper, you know, on the ground, and then you look at yourself, was that how they were comparing themselves to? And if that be the case, those particular types of humanoids were absolutely huge. And you can look at Deuteronomy, and it says the cities were great, and they were walled to heaven. I mean, they had to be huge in the sight. So if you start looking at, you know, some of the megalithic builders, I mean, buildings, you can start to see that, you know, that Moses' spies were seeing this as they were traveling, and they were coming back and saying, you know, we're scared to death. These people are great and tall. You know, they're like absolutely huge, and they're building all these cities. So it shows, I think it shows a pattern text that there was these megalithic builders that had these great architectural skills, and that they were actually unmatched. In other words, there was nothing similar to that. And when you do, you know, the archaeological, I guess, review of those particular things that have survived, I think, probably from ancient times and were actually built even after the flood, you find that they were manufactured in such a way that even today we can't duplicate, and that being things like the ziggurat temples and some of the pyramids and things of that nature. We do not have the capability to move those tons of rocks into those perfect alignments. And we're talking about perfect alignments. And when I was doing the research, I, of course, like I mentioned earlier about these groove ware people, I found that even in their stone pottery that they began to manufacture there in Sumner, they actually, on that pottery, had a snake-like design, which when I looked at it, it reminded me of the diamondback rattlesnake, because being from South Georgia, that's something you've got to watch out for, you know, all the time. And so having seen those geometric, you know, skin patterns that those particular snakes have, I found that that same pattern was kind of similar to those stones anywhere that was like what I call, like where they had painted or made it really pretty architecturally. They actually used the snake, dragon, serpent markings. And so if it was done by what I would believe the Adam's lineage through Seth, they would have never used the serpent or the dragon or anything of that nature. It had to have come from Cain's lineage, that these particular people that were teaching what I call architectural sciences to Cain's lineage, and then how it came through the flood, and then it was being taught again by what I believe was Ham's lineage, because I believe he was the weakest link that came through the flood. And that their involvement with the remnants are even messing again with what I call fallen angels that came upon the daughters of man and had those particular giants before the flood, that knowledge had to be brought forth. And when you do the research on this, you do find that Ham was considered Hermes by these Egyptians, and he was actually called the god of Thoth. He was Thoth in Egypt. And then, of course, his sons, Nimrod, and his lineage from him are the ones that we see the pharaohs and the you know, all the things that are involved with the building of the pyramids prior to the flood and then thereafter. You cannot just say that was just a coincidence. I mean, I have heard this over and over. well, you know, we can't really put the dots together, but you really can, because the Bible is showing us that that architectural building started before the flood, and that it came through the flood, and that it survived to teach, you know, these remnants of whatever left when Moses' Israelites were going, you know, out and trying to go to the promised land. They were seeing all these things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's look at that. I have my Bible open as you were talking. I was relating what you were saying. And I just want to sort of show people the genesis of this, from Genesis, by the way, chapter 4, line 16, verse 16 of chapter 4, does say, Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod. Verse 17 says, and Cain knew his wife, in other words, they had sexual relations, and she conceived and bare Enoch, and he built a city. So here we have also the lineage of Cain becoming city builders as well. And then the ungodly began to multiply, and evidently these strange beings, evidently devils, demons or whatever, chapter 6, they came down and saw that the daughters of men were good-looking, fair. And they said, we'll take wives of whoever we want. And they did that, it says here. When they saw that the daughters of men were fair, they took them wives of all which they chose. And evidently that made God very angry, because it was very repugnant, a race of sort of, is that what you believe, that demon seed mingle with the seed of you know, mankind? And they became a horrible race. Historians say, well, even the Bible here in Genesis 6:4 calls them giants. It says, and there were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, and the same became mighty men, men of renown. I wonder, do you believe this was the beginning of the great myths that later moved on into Egypt, Babylonia, to Rome, and to Greece? You know, the myths of the mighty men of renown, the heroes, the Hercules, Apollo, Zeus, and all of these great mighty men that looked like men, had the same appetites of men, and yet they were gods. Is that the way you see that all developed?
Yes, I do, Tex. I do believe that that is, you know, we have always been taught that that was mythological, and mythological meaning didn't really happen, that it was made up. But, you know, I just felt like, even as a child, when I first heard that there was a little bit more to this, I always felt like that when people wrote back in those days that they were writing history, that they were not writing a bestseller novel, you know, for the masses to, you know, devour. It was for the purpose of promoting history to, you know, to the future as to what was happening. So I do believe that we're dealing with that issue here when we're talking about those great men of renown, that the Bible specifically is saying that those people did exist. And of course we know there had to be a direct relationship between exchange of knowledge between those who built megalithic monuments before the flood and those that resurfaced with that similar knowledge after the flood. And we know that those in the Bible, it's telling us that when, you know, the spies of Moses went out, they're saying those are from the remnant of the giants that existed before the flood, and that they have these huge cities that are so tall. And at that still point in time, they're considering themselves as grasshoppers to these beings.
Well, you know, it says that here in Genesis, that in the days of Noah, there were giants in the earth, and also after that. So even after the Noahic flood, there were giants later on. And those are the giants, the children of Anak, and that were so gigantic, and maybe in their size and strength and so forth, that you're right. When they came back and reported to Joshua, they said, we're like grasshoppers in their sight. We're afraid of them. We can't possibly defeat them. Of course, you know, Joshua wasn't too happy with that report, because he said God is going to give us the victory. You know, we can defeat the giants. Well, I think, and they did, of course.
Right, they did. And I think that that was one of the things that David won such great honor in God's eyes, was that he was willing to take on the giant, you know, with just his little...
Oh, so Goliath perhaps was another one of these giants, yes, of the Noahic era.
So I think it was the intent for to try to rid the earth of this particular type of being, and it was to take it away, or take the promised land away from those beings. So I think that these, like I said, megalithic cultures and things that were involved in all this building, it shows you that if the builders were the giants, God did not like that. And so that remnant has remained here and has continued to do these buildings in honor of Satan against God's will, just as it was back then. You know, I look at some of the situations where megalithic builders, you know, have built buildings all around the world. And it's interesting to me that there was like a sudden disappearance of these builders. And then you go through the flood, and then you've got the remnant, and you've got some buildings and that kind of thing again. But just, for example, in Europe, you had, you know, the megalithic builders who built like Stonehenge and some of the things that are over there. And you find that once they disappeared, that these groups called the Druids, who had these mystical religions, in other words, they were worshiping, like we were talking about earlier, the laws of nature and theosophy, and they knew the motion of the stars and the size of the universe, and they had all this stuff going on that we see in New Age culture right now. So it kind of lets you understand that there was an exchange of ideas, really, between the pre-flood megalithic builders and then their remnants after the flood. And then when those people disappeared, then you had these underground groups, or these mystical groups with different names, popping up like the Druids did, and they were starting to build things like stone circles and solar temples. And interesting enough, they were building them on earth currents. And I think that's the real key to all this, is most of your megalithic structures are built on these, what they call earth currents, and they align perfectly with stars, planets, and the heavens. And you can't say that somebody was just a caveman out building, because they were actually placing these huge monuments on particular sites of kind of sacred, I call it sacred geometry. And it was almost like it was kind of like an invisible college of builders who were actually teaching their initiates, you know, on how to use this sacred science to bring about kind of an enlightenment, or I actually say a way to put in God's face, we're going to keep doing this against your will. And a perfect example was, you know, Ham's son Nimrod. What does he do? He goes out and he builds the Tower of Babel. And if you look at that, when God started seeing them start building again, what did he do? I've got to do something. You know, I'm going to spread people away. I can't keep letting them build. Because if you look at that, he did not want that, or he would not have destroyed that, you know, temple in those days if he had not been totally against that text.
Oh, yeah, well, they sought to become one and be like the gods, and sought to build a temple to heaven. You know, we only have about 45 seconds or so. When we come back, I want to ask you about this invisible college of builders, you know, that must have been receiving instruction from these giants who became, you know, the demons and devils, the dark angels. But, you know, they were submitting this serpent-like knowledge of how to build these megaliths, the pyramids, the ziggurats, across the world, in China, in South and Central America, throughout Babylonia. And they continue today. I want to talk to you about the Invisible College of Builders, page 61 of your book, and what you call in your book, Their Great Work. Okay?
That sounds great.
All right. We'll be right back. Hey, my guest today is Dr. Joy Jeffries Pugh. That's spelled P-U-G-H. I'm Tex Mars, and we'll be right back after this brief message. Well, hello again. Tex Mars here. I promised I'd tell you how to get this book, Eden, The Knowledge of Good and Evil, Eden, E-D-E-N, by Dr. Joy, that's J-O-Y-E, Jeffries Pugh. P-U-G-H. Now, the book itself has a lot of footnotes and references in it. It's over 470 pages total in length. 470, almost 500 pages. And we ask for a gift of $30 to the ministry, $30. And please add $3 for shipping and handling. A total of $33, which, of course, just happens to be the highest initiation degree in Freemasonry by pure coincidence. $33 for the book Eden, and that'll take care of shipping and postage. And we have a number of copies on hand. If we don't, we'll order some more because I want to keep this book going out around the world. So please order the book Eden, The Knowledge of Good and Evil. You'll discover the truth about Cain, builder of cities, about the giants and the civilization that they built. And who are these giants? Are they not demon entities? You'll learn why the Masons keep emphasizing these two pillars of knowledge called Jachin and Boaz, and why they say these are the pillars of their strength, and what that has to do with Noah and the flood. Oh, the Bible is an amazing predictor of the future, dear friends. You'll learn about the great work of the Illuminati. You'll discover what goes on in the 13th and the 14th degree of Scottish Rite Freemasonry and how that connects with mysterious monuments and architecture. It's an amazing story, and there are things in here that I don't even talk about in Mysterious Monuments about the secret Illuminist architecture of Washington, D.C. What connection to the New World Order is this amazing architecture and monuments in Washington, D.C. that were placed there hundreds of years ago? Why, some people believe the New World Order wasn't even conceived a few hundred years ago. But the monuments and architecture, Dr. Pugh will convince you, shows that they had a very, very meticulous plan. You'll learn about the meaning of the laying of cornerstones by Masons when buildings are begun, especially federal buildings. And there's so much here. You'll learn why the super rich of the Illuminati, the Vanderbilts and all the Rothschilds and all the others, are into symbols and into monuments and architecture and what it all means for you and me today. Okay? So this book, Eden, The Knowledge of Good and Evil, $33, that takes care of shipping and handling. Here's how to get your book, okay? And you'll probably want to order an extra book to give friends, because yours will be dog-eared by the time you use it, and, you know, it'll be all marked up. That's the way my book is. Okay, Eden. Just ask for the book Eden by Dr. Pugh, P-U-G-H. Call us toll-free and order the book. Use your Visa, MasterCard, Discover. Our number here at Power of Prophecy is, now that's toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. That's, of course, 8 to 5:30 during the work week. And on the other hand, you can get it on our website, powerofprophecy.com. Powerofprophecy.com. In fact, I believe it's on the home page, Jerry. If not, then go to the little search engine, just type in Eden, E-D-E-N. But I believe it's even on the home page right there on the front. So just click on the little picture of the cover, and it'll take you right to a description of the book and all, and allow you to order it on what they call the market basket there, okay? But it'll be real simple for you to order it online, Power of Prophecy. But you know what? We don't mind phone calls. A lot of people today say, I hate to call you. I'm you know, disturbing you. But I just don't know how to use the computer online ordering system. Hey, listen, you're not disturbing us at all. We have the most friendly people in the world working at Power of Prophecy, and they would love to assist you. I mean, no problem. They'll answer your questions and all. I mean, in terms of our books and everything, it is an order line. They're not just like, you know, Bible research people. But in terms of our products and such that we offer, they'll, you know, help you out. Okay? And they might even, you know, if you're interested in the subject, they might send you some info, some flyers and such on other books. And nobody's going to try to press you to buy anything. They take your order, but they don't try to sell you anything, okay? They're just there to help. Now, you can order this book. Ask for the book Eden, E-D-E-N, $33, check, money order, or cash. And you can send it to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. By the way, Jerry's my broadcast engineer. It's so funny to me. I was on the internet the other day, and somebody, you know, they say these things about me. You know, I don't even recognize myself when I go on the internet. You know, these people saying these things that, you know, for example, some people say that, I prophesied the world would end in the year 2000. Well, you've worked here how long, Jerry? 99. You know, no man knows the day nor the hour when Jesus is coming. I'm not about to prophesy any particular date. We do know the signs and this, you know, it's getting close, but, that's on the web that I prophesied that I'm a false prophet because I prophesied the world would end at Y2K. And about the only thing I told people was be prepared. The government says it's going to be bad. Actually, I told people I don't think it's going to be as bad as the government says. But I'm knocked for that. But the one that I enjoy, we've been here at this address, what, 13 years? The people must not even research my address. But they had this big, long blast about me. And it turned out to be a witch's website. But they don't tell you they're witches. It's like freedomofreligion.com or something like. Sounds good, you know. But turned out they're a bunch of witches. And they were saying Tex Mars, in, I think they said in 1999, was arrested by the FBI and his ministry at Patterson Road was seized by the FBI and sold at auction. And so he had to change his address, and he is now headquartered in Toledo, Ohio. Well, that was a shock to me. We've been here, what, at least 13 years at this address. You know, I love this place. I look out the window. I can see deer outside sometimes, sort of in the country. We haven't been shut down by anybody. There's been no – this thing was really colorful. It said an FBI SWAT team swooped in with hundreds of FBI agents and closed us down, and now we moved to Toledo, Ohio. Well, folks, I've never been to Toledo, Ohio. Nobody shut us down. There's been no SWAT team here. It's just amazing. It's sort of like somebody once wrote on the internet that Tex Mars lives in a mansion, and every mansion has its own horse stables and all that. Let me tell you something, friends. My name may be Tex, but I don't ride any horses. I tried to ride a horse one time. Now, Jerry, you're a horse rider. It was so embarrassing. See, I was with all these people. I was in New Mexico at this religious retreat, and they all wanted to go horse riding. And because my name was Tex, they were just sure from Texas that I could ride a horse. I tried, but this rascal kicked me off, or he bucked me off. The first thing, I was all dirty, muddy. And boy, they laughed about me. There's Tex and he can't even ride a horse. So no, I don't live in some mansion with a horse stable in the back. There's no horses, you know, where I live. There are a few raccoons maybe and my dog Daisy, and that's about it. Well, enough of that. Let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Dr. Joy Pugh, author of Eden, The Knowledge of Good and Evil. Joy, I'll tell you, with your book becoming so popular, they'll probably be saying things about you on the internet for long.
You just never know. It's really a sad day when people do not do their research, because I feel like many times people jump to conclusions before they have really done research on their own. So I find it almost, you know, something to laugh about when I see things of that nature being kind of pushed and promoted around. I do think that some people try to discourage people from knowing the truth, and I think there are people out there who hoax things and debunk things just for that, you know, purpose. But, you know, I would encourage people, once you hear something like we're talking about today, that you really do pick up your Bible and start really investigating, and you're going to see that what we're trying to tell you is the truth.
Well, there are forces, though, that exist, that when they read your book, they don't want the public to know this secret knowledge. And in generations past, I'm not just trying to be dramatic. You might have been assassinated for revealing the things that are in this book.
Well, I have been approached by people who are high up in the Masonic order wanting to know where I got my research from, because they had never seen it being brought out to the public like I was doing and was quite concerned about it. And one particular person, you know, was like, I just cannot believe you know these secrets. You're not supposed to know these secrets. And you could tell that it had totally upset this man. That, in fact, he told me he had read my book 3 times straight through, that he could not get over it.
Hmm.
And so, you know, for him to come forward, I think because he had read it that many times, I think it was really making sense to what I was trying to say to him. He knew what I was telling him was the truth, and all of a sudden it was opening doors into a mind that had been totally brainwashed in another direction. And I was absolutely amazed by it, no different than the person that entered my office one time and I saw him give a lion's paw handshake to several of the men that were there in a meeting. And so when he started to shake my hand, I gave him the lion's paw grip of the Masonic order back, and the man could not say anything. He looked scared. The whole time you could tell he wanted to leave the meeting. He would not give me eye contact. He was so nervous. It just took him back so bad. So these things go on right before our eyes, and if you're not open and have an understanding about these particular things that are being done under your nose, you know, they just go about their business, and most people just sit there and just totally are dumb and don't know any different. But when you confront them with it and you make them think, most of the time they are really disturbed by it, because they know that what we're saying, Tex, is the truth.
Oh yes, they definitely do. I was with this Mason one time, and he was trying to say everything I said was not true, and he was actually lying about several things. And I just looked at him and I said, tell us about Mahabone. And boy, he got really upset and he got up and left the room. And, you know, their lost word, you know, substitute word Mahabone, that they have whispered in their ear.
That's right.
And they, you know, here's the whole thing. What they don't understand is God has empowered certain people. Dr. Joy Jeffries Pugh is one of them. And God has empowered you to go out and get this knowledge and understand it. Their books, their textbooks are so complicated that the average person, it is true, cannot understand them. But I'm going to say something to you, dramatic, Dr. Pugh. I'm going to propose to you that the Bible itself is very complex and not understood by people, even with PhDs, doctorates, and so forth. It takes the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit, giving discernment to a person to understand the mysterious passages of the Bible.
I agree with you.
Now, I know you can read about Jesus dying on the cross and these things, but to properly understand them, you don't need to be a doctor. You don't need to be a high school graduate. You need to, with faith and sincerity and wanting to know the knowledge of Jesus Christ. I think the Holy Ghost will instruct you. Am I wrong on that?
I really do believe that is the case, because so many times, and I can look back in, you know, my own history of learning and trying to understand, that, you know, it really does tell you that, you know, you're going to be fed milk because you're a baby, but, you know, once you get a little bit more understanding that there is meat in that word. And I do think you have to really seek, and it has to be a gift of discernment that God gives you to be able to see, because many, many times I would read things and it would never occur to me. And then the more that I really took the time to really seek God and seek his understanding, then I began to see the real meat of what was being said there. And that's why I feel like that my research is so important for people to read text, because hopefully it will open their eyes and not let them walk through this life totally blind, when there's so much right here that's so important. Your soul is so important, and that's really why I wrote this book, is because, you know, every person's soul is very important, and your choices and what you participate in and what you yoke yourselves together with, you know, it's going to determine where you're going to spend in an eternity. And I don't think people realize how important that is.
Well, now, let's get into the text here of your book and some really interesting things. These pillars of knowledge, what are they all about? And are they connected with the pillars called Jachin and Boaz? Always these two columns in Freemasonry, all of their literature, all of their illustrations keep picturing these two columns, these pillars. Many of their buildings, even their temples, have two great columns in front. What are the pillars of knowledge, and what do they have to do, let's say, with the hermetic knowledge, the secret knowledge that's been spawned throughout the ages?
Well, you know, it's very important that these particular pillars of knowledge, which I believe were actually teaching tools. It was information in stone. And one of the things that I found really interesting was once these megalithic builders had survived the flood, they began to really show people how to start reading. And we find that, you know, in Sumner, when people begin to read, then of course you begin to see the building and all the civilization start just manifesting itself and just blossoming. So there was a really passage of the secrets of wisdom and the sciences, really of the fallen angels or Satan and his in things that he knew about. They were actually inscribed on those pillars to be able to survive the flood. And I do believe that, you know, like we mentioned earlier, that Ham was the weakest link in the Noah agenda through the flood, and that through his knowledge from what those pillars contained, he was able to find those pillars and to bring them back into humanity. And if you look at this, you find that, you know, when, according to Scripture, God actually told, you know, people not to ever use man's tools upon the stone. I mean, he told Abraham that the stone was polluted if it was reworked by human hands. So, in other words, the building and the building projects that were going on after that period of time, just like we were talking about early in the Tower of Babel, that they were actually taking and making things and perfecting it, and they were making the stone perfected. And really, in God's eyes, the stones, as he has made them, were already, you know, perfected. So I was able to tie together that this Cain's lineage coming through the flood, along with his, you know, the descendants of the megalithic builders, were actually Satan's continuous rebellious plan, really against God's original creation. I mean, it was like a get back for being put out of Eden, really. And if you look at how you know, these particular pillars that had this information on them, they were supposed to have actually had on them written things like architecture, science, math, music, writing, astronomy, and that kind of things. But everything, if you go and you even go into, like, some of the giant buildings that are even, you know, still here that were what I call right after the flood, you see that they are actual, like, libraries in stone. In other words, they felt like if they could write something on stone, write something on a pillar, and it's interesting, all these pillars, like the Masons use and things, they will have like a story behind that pillar. In other words, each one of the little symbols or whatever little flowers or anything that would be on a particular pillar is actually teaching you something. It is a library in stone. And the connection to, you know, all the things as far as the ziggurat temples, the Mayan temples, the temples, the pyramids, that kind of megalithic thing ties together. And to me, the particular symbols are doing nothing but actually venerating Satan. I mean, it's right in your face that these particular builders were looking at Satan for their inspiration. And then they were saying, well, he existed and that they loved him. I mean, you just look at the Mayans and all the things they had about the feathered serpent coming down the side of their pyramids there in Mexico. It is bringing the serpent from the sky down to the earth. I mean, everything was about that kind of thing. So once I began looking at how that was moving through history, then of course it made a lot of sense to me when I started reading about Solomon's temple. And why did Solomon's temple start falling and crumbling, you know, when he was supposed to be this great king and he had been blessed by God and he had really everything that a person could ever want, you know. But he had been told to stay away from, you know, these other gods and these other people and not to get them involved in what he was doing. But instead, he turned around and he hired these people from Tyre to come in to build the temple. And when he did, his whole kingdom was destroyed through paganism. And what I found out was that that was because there was a mixing of pagan with what God had intended. And if we look at the tabernacle that was, you know, in the wilderness and was in there with Moses, it's not really the same manifested, you know, huge building, and it's in stone and it's, you know, megalithic and it's huge and that kind of thing. So there was a mixing of the pagans, you know, what their practices were with what God intended for his worship place to be, I believe. And when that happened, I feel like that is why, you know, really Jehovah left the building and King Solomon's whole, you know, his kingdom just fell to nothing. And if you really connect that now to the understanding of who Hiram the builder was, then if you do any research into the Masonic order, you find that they venerate in their oaths and in their little plays and all their little teachings a man called Hiram Abiff. And he was supposed to have been the person that Solomon hired to build Solomon's temple. And then that's where you see the craft of bronze and copper and gold and all these kind of things coming together from what I believe was the pagan structures of these megalithic buildings into what was Christian. And that's the concern, is that over the course of time, looking at this, that we have seen indoctrination of pagan practices or the worship. When I say pagan, I'm not saying that it's not a real thing, because Satan is very real and the worship of him is very real. But when I'm using the word pagan, meaning Satan religions, when they were brought in and mixed with what I believe was God's intention for us to build and to worship him, then that actually brought about the downfall of certain things like Solomon's temple. And then when you see that coming on through history, you can't help but notice that the Masonic order just absolutely venerates Hiram Abiff as the great architect of the universe. So they were saying that this architect that supposedly Solomon brought in to build, that he was like the great architect. And then he unfortunately is in a play or in their oaths or in their history, and they kind of accuse people, you know, of having killed him, and they've lost this and they've lost that. I think that was really being indicative of what happened prior to the flood, that there was major building going on, major megalithic building projects happening, and then the flood came along and destroyed it, and the Master Mason was kind of destroyed out and had to rebuild and go in a different direction. And looking at this, then I was able to say, well, you know, this is interesting that these particular builders who came out of, you know, Sumner and who became a part of the world prior to, you know, Jesus coming, and then after Jesus we had the what was called the Essenes, who were forced underground, and when they came out they were like the Rex Dias bloodlines. They looked after the bloodlines of Jesus according to their teachings and their Gnostic things. And those particular people formed, according to the Scottish Rite Freemasonry, they are the people who formed the Knights Templar. And you know, Tex, when I was going to school, I was always taught that the Templars were these great people, that they were Christians, and that they were helping pilgrims return to the destroyed temple site there in Jerusalem. But the more I started digging and trying to find out the truth about the Templars, I found out they were very much very evil men. And their intention was to get all the relics and all the things that were under the Temple Mount and be able to manifest these things for themselves. And the most, I guess, factor that connects them to the megalithic builders is that those Knights Templar began building Gothic cathedrals all over, you know, the area, you know, in European areas. And those Gothic cathedrals, even though they look like they are, or actually were built to, I guess, praise Jesus and Mary and that thing, because they do have some, you know, designs and pictures and stuff in there, they were actually built based on megalithic hidden sciences and harmonic geometry, like you mentioned earlier. And when I began to see that the particular Gothic cathedrals were actually placed on oracle sites, you know, there were ancient oracle sites, then that really did start like ringing a bell, because then all your megalithic structures are built on these sites that have these underground water aquifers that cross with the magnetic lines that are called ley lines or dragon lines. It's a magnetic grid that goes around the earth. This is the same concept that was used by the builders before the flood and the ones that came thereafter, including the pyramids and all the other megalithic structures. Here we have what we believe, what I believe through history has come now to the point of the Knights Templar using that same sacred technology. And they placed their Gothic, huge Gothic cathedrals with all this great architecture, all these designs, as nothing but libraries in stone, particular aquifers and ley lines. And within those Gothic cathedrals, they have either an underground crypt that's actually a noted little area where only the initiates know of, that they go and they actually put themselves into a state no different than the oracles who God, you know, had told, you know, King Saul, he better stay away from the oracle. But what did he do? He went to the oracle, and the oracle was trying to conjure for him the spirit of Samuel. Well, what happened? I mean, that was what caused King Saul to lose grace with God. It's not that the oracle fight would not work. The oracle sites did work, but God did not want his people participating in the conjuring of spirits and allowing something to speak through you. So that was like the Oracle of Delphi and all the other things, and those things are mentioned in our Bible. So these Gothic cathedrals were put over those oracle sites, these old oracle sites like the sun and certain planets around this area. And they were based, especially there's what I call the seven Gothic ones, are based on these particular oracle sites that were called a Lacedaeum. In other words, they were based on the Milky Way galaxy. I mean, everything matches the planets to the ground. It's like as above, so below. And this is the whole concept that these people have been after, is to put heaven on earth, to mirror heaven on the earth. And so, you know, I look at the Gothic cathedrals and I see the photographs and stuff, and you see Jesus with a lot of the pictures they've drawn him. He's using like hand signs. And I'm like, Jesus did not use Masonic hand signs. I am just sorry. But if you go into those cathedrals, you see that they're using these hand signs like these secret societies do to communicate certain things. Well, some people think, well, Jesus is just pointing. He's using one finger. He's pointing up. He's talking about heaven. But those particular signs are not. They are not Christian. They are absolutely pagan, and they are used for the purpose of indoctrination, and as well as communication between the initiates of what are Satan's seeds or fallen angels and the people who are willing to follow them, such as the Illuminati and those people that participate in those kinds of things. So I really, really feel like that what we're seeing as far as building going on from the time of, you know, the Templars up until the point that the Templars are really, you know, they're told that they're going to be rounded up, and they were, you know, they were actually told they were heretics, and they were tried to be destroyed. What happened is they went underground. The Hospitallers, they took over their you know, the things that they had, and were really good friends with the Pope and the Vatican. So then, when the Templars kind of disappeared, the Hospitallers were the ones that kind of kept everything separate, but they owned it. And then all of a sudden, what resurfaces from the Knights Templar, but the Order of Freemasons.
Of the Freemasons. Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Joy, Jeffries Pugh, we've run out of time here. Boy, we could keep going. This is so very fascinating, and I want to have you on again. So we'll continue our series here, possibly, because I still want to talk to you about the great work of the Illuminati, so-called the Goat of Mendez or Baphomet, the Invisible College of Builders, but I'm afraid we're going to have to save that for another time. Hey, thank you so much for being our guest today on Power of Prophecy.
It's been great, Tex. Look forward to being back on again.
All right, good enough. And folks, Eden is available for $33 shipping. Just call us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673, or go to powerofprophecy.com. Well, until next time, may God richly bless you, and I invite you to tune in each week and discover the power of prophecy.